All right, well, welcome everyone to another cross... Okay, let me start that again. Welcome, everybody, and welcome to another crossover episode between the Stallone Fanatics podcast and the Going the Distance, the Rocky Series podcast. I'm Ryan, and with Ryan or with Chris or with however you want to say it, whoever's listening to whatever podcast, Chris and Ryan are back together.
That's right. Just like Rocky and Apollo dancing in the ocean.
That's right. Who gets to be Apollo?
Well, I'll let you be Apollo.
It's too bad we gotta get old, Stallion.
Just keep punching.
This episode, I presume, will be showcased on Stallone Fanatics, and it'll also be showcased on the Rocky Series podcast. I don't mind on our podcast, the Rocky Series podcast, doing movies or talking about Stallone when it's got nothing to do with Rocky per se, because Stallone is Rocky and Rocky is Stallone. His career is really the important thing that we're covering. So we have a special kind of bonus episode today. It's for our side of the fence. We are discussing the 2002 classic film by Sylvester. Okay.
I think you might be going just a little bit overboard with the classic.
Oh, am I? Okay. Well, okay, Chris, I'll get... Okay, so let's talk about Avenging Angelo here. I mean, people who have downloaded the podcast have already seen the title of this podcast. It's going to be something about Avenging Angelo. But Avenging Angelo is a 2002 American mafia quote-unquote comedy film directed by Martin Burke. And it stars, of course, Sylvester Stallone and Madeline Stowe. And of note, this is the last film in which the poor departed Anthony Quinn appeared in. It was released a few months after his death. So this movie killed him.
Yeah. Yeah, and apparently Madeline Stowe's career as well.
We actually have three victims with this film. We have three different victims. We got Anthony Quinn's life, Madeline Stowe's career, and the viewer's time.
That's right. The only one who came out of this on top in the end was Sylvester Stallone.
Well, in a way, but before we... Yeah, but let's lead up to this movie in a sec, because Avenging Angelo did have a box office run. You might not know this, but it was filmed actually in my home country, Canada.
Right.
It was shot in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, and also on location in Sicily, which I thought was great. And so that was probably half the budget, just getting the cast and crew out there to Sicily. So yeah, the budget was $17 million with a box office of $824,000.
Wow.
Let's just say it probably did not recoup its costs.
Now, was this it was U.S. released in the theaters?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, it has a box office, and usually the box office is representation of... this is from Box Office Mojo, so I would...
Must have been in Podunk, Iowa somewhere, because I don't remember ever seeing it around here in Detroit.
Well, I think you're right. Sorry. It was released in four different countries, my bad. One of them not being the United States. It was released in Egypt. It was released in Egypt, Italy.
Were they paying camels?
Yeah. Italy, Mexico, and Spain.
Hmm.
It was the most popular film of the four in Spain. Spain gave it $568,000, and Egypt gave it $3,000.
Unbelievable.
Oh. Of note, 2002, Avenging Angelo. We should also note what were Stallone's films leading up to this, because this was kind of a time where I hate to say it there, Chris, but he had a few straight videos, and this is one of them.
Yeah, well, there was this one in ICU, or Detox, as it's known in certain places.
Yeah.
Detox actually, well, it was ICU here. It actually did have a very short theater run. And I do mean very short, like 2 weeks. But out of the two, I thought, you know, ICU was better. But I still like Avenged Sevenfold. But leading up to this, you had Driven, Get Carter, I think was in that, you know, the same era. I mean, so that, it wasn't like there were bad movies leading up to this, but I think it was just a situation where Stallone was trying so hard to move away from the here, let me rip my shirt off and shoot up the country type of thing. Maybe that just wasn't faring so well for him at that point.
Right. As a Stallone fan, it was hard to see this kind of dip in his career.
But yeah.
Because he seemed to be such a almost an unstoppable force at the box office. Because in 1993 was Demolition Man.
Yeah.
And then 9 years later, we have Avenging Angelo. So in less than a decade, we go from a box office smash of Demolition Man and end up straight to video. Because he did The Specialist, which was panned, but still kind of did something. Judge Dredd, panned, but still kind of did something. Assassins, panned, but still kind of did something. Daylight, panned, but still kind of did something. And Copland, not panned, didn't do much box office-wise.
Yeah.
It was after Copland that he did the Ants movie.
Yep.
But Detox and Get Carter and Driven, Detox, Get Carter, Driven, Avenging Angelo, those four in a row really kind of pooped the bed, as they say.
Yeah.
But today we have the pleasure, we're going to get to those. You know, I think we should cover those. We should mention that we're doing this Avenging Angelo movie out of request and or challenge from the members of the Slycast podcast.
That's right. Challenge accepted.
Yes, right. Craig Cohan and Chris and I, we all did our trifecta crossover podcast, the Slycast podcast, Stallone Finance podcast, and Going the Distance Rocky Series podcast. So we're, of course, talking Stallone, and Avenging Angelo came up, and Craig was like, oh, maybe you guys should cover that. And we said, you know what? We will. So we're doing it for you, Craig.
That's right.
Because you might be
the team.
I don't know who else is going to listen to this episode once they see the title.
Probably nobody. This podcast will end up making less of a streak than the movie itself.
Yes.
Which is hard to imagine.
That's kind of the background. The film was a flop, at least at the box office. But was it a flop amongst fans? Do fans like this movie? Well, Chris and I are going to discuss what we thought of this movie. I had the luxury of seeing this 24 hours ago, so it's fresh in my mind. I took extensive notes to jog your memory, Chris, if needed.
Yeah, unfortunately, that probably will be the case. I don't know that my mind wants to be jogged, but it's not that bad.
Well, okay, we'll get to that. It was directed by Martin Burke. Martin Burke is also a Canadian. He's a Canadian director, novelist, and screenwriter, and he has kind of a weird career. He's worked in film. The only films people may have heard of are he was a co-writer for Top Secret! ! He was a writer for the Sugartime movie/show on HBO and the second Civil War on HBO and the Pentagon Wars on HBO. So he's done a few HBO shows. So that's kind of a prolific. Yeah. He did Pirates of Silicon Valley. He was a writer-director on that on TNT and Animal Farm, which is currently on TNT. And he's done about 20 or 15 documentaries, and he's written about 7 novels, and he's got some awards and nominations. So it's not like he has a an embarrassing career, but this film of note is the only one that he, I think, completely directed as a feature film. I think the rest of the stuff seems to be kind of like films that are on HBO and stuff. I think this one was intended to be. And what I want to know is how does this guy get Stallone? Or, you know, do you ever wonder about that?
It was weird because I didn't, his name off the top of my head, I didn't know it, but I, watching the movie, I always wondered, you know, it seemed like whoever was behind the camera on this thing was definitely not in the same wheelhouse as Stallone. And, right. I mean, this isn't particularly the kind of movie that you would normally see Sly in anyway, but, you know, try something new, but you could tell in watching this movie that unlike a lot of other movies that Stallone ventures into, he had little or nothing to do with the production part of the whole thing.
Right. So let's talk about this film. Ready? Now I'm going to try to talk about it the way if somebody's never seen this film and they don't want to, and for those who've seen the film, they can follow along in their head type thing as the movie goes along. Avenging Angelo, 2002, Stallone was 55, 56 when this movie was made. And Madeline Stowe was 44. Now, keep those ages in mind. because it's a 12 years difference, which isn't that much. I'm actually 8 years older than my wife, so 12 year difference between the interests of the film is not that big in Hollywood if you think about it.
Right.
Stallone looks very good here. He's 56, and can you help explain, like, I look at him in this movie, 2002. He's recovered from his 5 years ago, his Copland fat acting.
Right.
So he's looking
fat Elvis period.
Yeah. So as he did on purpose for that film, but he looks right. Great. His face looks great. But this was 15 years ago, Chris. Why does he look so different now? I know we all age, and he is 71, but are we just going to change that much between 56 and 71, or?
Well, I think that's, you know, it does sort start to speed up, you know, once you hit 50, you know, it's kind of all downhill from there for some people. But I mean, honestly, looking at him in that movie, I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm not saying he looks bad, but he looks different in that movie as opposed to any other movie I've ever seen him in. And I don't know if it's the hairstyle.
Okay, or slow down.
Something.
Let's talk about the hair. Now, my brother Ruben on our show, he's often hinted and kind of teased Stallone for the plugs. I never really noticed it. I think in this film, I have to say, because I was minuting this film. I was stopping and taking notes.
Right.
His hair did look fake in this film.
Yeah, that was my impression too.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, are we talking John Travolta bald here? What have we got going on with Stallone? Is he bald?
I don't know. It's weird because that was the first movie where I ever noticed anything off about his hair. But then after that, I didn't really. I don't know. It's weird because I don't like now when I see him, it doesn't look like his hair is fake to me. Of course, I mean, you know, they have all that surgery now. I mean, you can do all kinds of different things and make it look real, I guess. But it doesn't appear to me now to be as strange or as offsetting as it did in that movie. It's almost like he was wearing a bad wig.
You know? Yeah, there was a couple scenes where the back of his hair was like feathered out. And it just looked,
it looked like
there might have been fake hair on the back of his head. Now it could have just been a bad hair day, but it did not look real. It looked either like heavily dyed. We're talking it was black.
Yeah,
and it was like that's fine. Look, actors and actresses dye their hair. That's not a big deal. But it didn't look like dyed hair. It just didn't look like real hair.
Yeah,
so Stallone's hair, it's the first time I've really kind of noticed, and I wasn't looking to be critical, that's what I mean, I just happened to notice.
Yeah, I don't know, like I said, I don't know what was going on there, but it was definitely unusual.
Now, let's get to the start, opening credits. We've music playing, and it's mafia-type kind of sounding music, and the music was done by, guess who?
Bill Conti.
Right. Again, what is Stallone? The connection is obviously Stallone, and then Bill Conti says, "Oh, well, I'll do a Stallone film." But I wonder when Bill signed up for this, he's like, "Oh my goodness, what have I done?" Because
it's very different for usual Bill Conti stuff. That there's no question about that because he's done a lot of Stallone films, and this definitely is a standout piece.
Right. The music's not bad, but it's...
No.
We'll get to that. Can we just say this film doesn't know if it wants to be an action movie, comedy, or drama, or a love story?
You got that right on the head. It has no clue what it wants to be.
Okay. All right. Oh, yeah, we should mention it stars Sylvester Stallone and the lovely 44-year-old Madeline Stowe. My goodness.
Yes.
She is just gorgeous in this film.
She really is.
She's definitely the highlight. And Stallone was good, like for what he had to work with. But Madeline Stowe, she was insane.
Yeah,
and that was so. We'll get to that. So we've got the opening credits, and we see some pictures, sly pictures from the past, from his real past. You know, showing, I guess the years past of his character that he's playing. Right. It kind of like, and then it's like mixed with some mafia looking pictures.
Yeah, there was definitely some Photoshop happening there.
Right. And then we have one young picture of Madeline Stowe and the one young picture of Anthony Quinn. So we had about 4 to 6 of Stallone, of course. But they could only afford to do one young picture of the two co-stars.
That's right.
So the music by Bill Conti's playing is kind of an upbeat Italian mafia sound so far type music. Pretty pretty, you know, it's good, but you get the sense it's like, if you didn't know what this movie was going into this, I don't know what you'd be thinking so far. You might be thinking, okay, it's not ominous Godfather type music. It is a little bit upbeat.
Yeah. And yeah, then it's kind of like quirky Italian.
Right. And then we hear Sly's voice. He narrates at the beginning.
My name's Frankie. Frankie Delano. And I'm a professional watcher. That's what I do. I try to stay in the shadows and watch.
I've noted his voice in this movie is very clear and almost a high tone.
Yep.
Did you notice that?
Well, like I said, it's one of those things where people have forever assumed that he talked just like Rocky.
Right.
And in real life, and that's not the case. I mean, he does have the, you know, or did have the issue with the, you know, the curved down lip from the forceps at birth and all that kind of thing. But when he wants to speak clearly, he absolutely can.
Right. And he does in this film. No, yep. No captions are needed. I was able to watch this without captions.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, I was watching
probably it on for my the best.
I was watching at work on my computer, so it was an illegally downloaded file, and I think
for shame.
I know. I'm a terrible person. I've put a lot of money in Sly's pocket. I'm not going to lie. I have.
So have I. Believe me.
Because so that file doesn't come with captions, but I usually watch movies with captions. But anyways, he says in this narration that he is a watcher.
Yep.
That's his title. He's a watcher. And who is he watching? Well, he's watching Madeline Stowe's character, and her name is Jen, and she happens to be, unbeknownst to her, the daughter of some mafia crime conglomerate who's like huge. He's got multi millions of dollars apparently. And he had a daughter that he needed to be protected because a hit went awry and he got pinned on a hit that wasn't him. They said, we're going to get revenge on Anthony Quinn and his family. His wife died in childbirth. That child that was born was Madeline Stowe. She was put with a couple who could not have children. Anthony Quinn said, I'll give you lots of money. You raise this girl. Never tell her that I exist. I will take care of you financially and her financially. And very well he did. They were in a huge home. This home is throughout the whole movie. That's the setup so far is, yeah. And then we go to the scene where Stallone's character, Frankie, is documenting with a video camera, with a tape. He's using a tape to film Anthony Quinn's character. A kind of a journal slash, like, this is who I am, because we get the sense, and Anthony Quinn's character gets the sense that he doesn't have much time left in this world. And he didn't, both in the movie and in real life.
In the last few months, Angela's been having me film messages to his daughter. It's kind of like he's getting his life in order, which kind of makes me nervous. Like he knows something I don't.
That's right.
So, and this film is to say, hey, Jennifer, I'm your father, and this is why you didn't know me growing up, but this is who I am. And if you're listening to this video or watching it, that means I am dead. The classic, if you're watching this, I am dead video. All right, so Frankie is documenting Angelo. So we should say, sorry, Angelo is Anthony Quinn. That's his name. Okay. So, spoiler alert, it looks like Angelo might have to be avenged.
Just possibly.
So, is there anything you want to talk about up to this point about the setup and what this movie's about? Essentially, the beginning 5 minutes and the documenting of the video?
I don't think there's much more to tell in that. It, like you said, it's, you know, he's documenting, basically letting Jennifer know what the story is, you know, what the truth of her identity, because he feels that his days are numbered. And he's kind of giving Frankie Stallone, not Frank Stallone, but Frankie the character. he's giving him sort of direction about, you know, you want me to put in a good word for you, you know. And
hey, Frankie, you want me to say something for you? You know, put in a good word or something?
Because Angela, it's going to embarrass me, okay?
Come on. You embarrass Louise.
He almost... He's willing to set Frankie up with Jennifer, but, you know, Frankie don't really want to go there. And I mean, he does, but he doesn't. And
we should make this known to our listeners that Angelo has hired Frankie from who knows when, before Jennifer was born.
Yep.
Yeah, it seems like Frankie has been around this family, because we're going to get into that, because...
He was a teenager.
No, I've done the timeline because it's insane. Oh. Okay, because remember, Stallone is 56.
Right.
Madeline character or what I always go by what the actors are in the movies. I don't care what they're supposed to be in the movie.
Right.
Because they don't make a mention, because they, you know, they look their age, and so I'm right. That's their age, right? So,
yeah.
So we find out later in the movie that Frankie was knew Jen's mother and father, which is Angelo, and I forget the name of his deceased wife, before Jennifer was born.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because he danced with his, Frankie danced with Jennifer's mom while Jennifer's mom was pregnant with Jennifer.
That's right, yep.
And he was 12 years old at that dance.
Yep.
Okay, so for whatever reason, Frankie's been working with the mafia since he was a kid.
That's crazy.
And you could argue that maybe he didn't have any parents, and that Angelo took him in because they have a father son relationship. We can see that they have great affection for each other. Which I don't want to bury the lead, but it's kind of weird because that's his daughter, and he wants to hook up Stallone with
right. Keep it in the family.
But they're not biologically related. However, the love that Frankie has for Angelo is that of a father's son. And the love that Angelo has for his estranged daughter is father to daughter. It's just the daughter is nowhere in this triangle just yet.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get to that. After they do the little filming assignment, they go to eat at a restaurant. Okay. In the car are two hitmen.
Yep.
And they're having like what you think should be a little comedy routine about, I'm not sure.
This freaking song. It makes my heart weep every time I hear it.
Yeah, I get a twinge too.
A twinge? What kind of person just gets a friggin' twinge when you hear a song like this?
So, what do you get?
The actor, who is one of the hitmen, who turns out to be the main bad guy hitman throughout this film, is actually from the Mike and Molly series.
That's right.
Yeah, I forget his name, but he's the Mike, not the Molly.
Right. Thank God.
I should say, before we get to the scene at the restaurant, which is a pivotal scene coming up, we see Jennifer, her character, for the first time. She's in a car with her husband, and they're having a fight because they have sent their son to boarding school or military school, 7 years old, and she didn't want to send her son away to boarding school. The husband did, and apparently he got his way. She didn't get her way, which is like the only marriage where the wife doesn't get her way.
That's right. What kind of marriage is that? Jeez.
It's crazy. Again, it plays like a comedy scene. She opens up the sunroof and starts yelling at the plane that has her kid in it, saying,
I see him in the plane! Robert! It wasn't my idea! I didn't mean to send you away, man!
Jennifer, Jesus, go! What are you doing?
I didn't want to send you to boarding school. It was your father. It wasn't me. I would never do that to you. She's got her feet in his face and everything. And I'm like, what is going on here? Any thoughts on that scene? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. It's well, like you said, it's the first introduction to Jen. And you realize very quickly that this woman is neurotic on a lot of levels. Although you find out later that there's some reasons for that. This is where, to me, the comedy in this movie exists is in Madeline Stowe and her character.
Right.
The rest of it's kind of like this. It's like almost like everybody around her is this serious mob type movie. And then she's this comedy movie in the middle of it.
It's like, yeah, she was given a different script. I think I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So that happened. I'm not going to do a scene by scene, but I kind of have to set up some of the Zane. I took notes. Right. I took notes where I was like, this is crazy, and there's a lot here, and maybe we shouldn't bore our listeners. In the first 8 minutes, Anthony Quinn is dead. He gets shot in the restaurant by Mike and Molly. He gets shot in the restaurant. Angelo was out, you know, trying to take care of a parking ticket. The worst bodyguard ever.
Let me get this straight. Are you saying that this little distance here is not negotiable?
The law is the law.
Okay, well, how about if I just pull it forward?
And how about I just call for some backup?
How about you not? You weren't so cute.
You watch it.
Yeah.
Buddy comes into the restaurant in public, complete public. No cameras in the restaurant, apparently.
My shine. Cheap. Aftershave. Must be Bruno.
Any last words?
Try the clams. Fabulous.
Try the clams.
That's right. That's right. The Mike and Molly actor says, hey, any last words before I shoot you in front of all these people? He's like, try the clams.
What a weird thing to say as you're about to be killed.
Well, you got the sense that this is a very, you know, he's lived in the mafia world his whole life. It's only fitting that he would get whacked.
Yeah, I mean, he as much predicted it with making that video.
Of course. Stallone comes running back in. I think I'll start using just the actors' names. It's easier for everyone to follow. So Stallone comes running back in, and he's like, oh my goodness, I suck at my job. And Anthony Quinn dies there on the spot. Oh, and Stallone gets shot as well by the hitman, but not killed. Yes. He gets shot in the side. Now we cut to Stowe, Madeline Stowe. She's at some book club, fan club meeting, and there's girls everywhere. All these women are wearing pastel-colored dresses. And they're all at this book club of this, like, rock and roll author-type dude who's, of course, Italian. He's, you know, got the scruffy beard. He's probably 30-something. And I guess he writes these romance adventure novels. He's at a book reading, book signing, and he reads a chapter from his book. And Madeline Stowe is actually, like, verbatim, has whatever part he's reading memorized. She's reading along while he's reading in her head. It's like, come on. Well, maybe she has a photographic memory. I don't know.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she's on drugs, too, by the way.
Yes. Can't forget that.
Yeah, so her friend at the party or whatever, at the fan club meeting, gave her drugs to calm her down from saying goodbye to her son.
Yep.
She was taking whatever. She took triple the amount they recommended.
Oh, messed up. I just sent my baby boy off to military academy.
Oh, God. I'm so wired. Am I having a heart attack?
No,
is that what's going on?
No, no. Men get heart attacks, but we don't.
We don't. Men do. We don't.
Can you breathe? Blow out.
Okay. Oh, God.
All right. You know what? Mom, this little helper to the rescue. I want you to take one of these. No, you know what, sweetie? Take two. And leave all your troubles behind. Trust me.
What are these?
Your husband gives them to his patients. Well, for me, he triples the dosage. Jennifer, I said take two pills. How many did you take?
I don't know. It's just what you told me.
Well, bon voyage, darling.
And so because of this, she has a dream sequence with the author, and then she comedically falls out of her chair. So we see Madeline Stowe here. She's kind of loopy. She's on drugs. She's swooning over this author. She falls out of the chair. She has a bad marriage. We get the sense she has a bad marriage. She doesn't know that Stallone exists. She doesn't know that she's been watched by her mafia boss, father, for 44 years. 44 yeah. years.
She's That's a been long time to be completely out of the loop.
Yes. She's been tracked since Stallone was 12.
Crazy.
Okay. So he's been watching her.
He's a great stalker.
He's been watching her for 44 years. So she drives home after this book club, and she crashes into the garage, and her airbag pops. I will give credit where credit's due. They were pretty realistic about the airbag. She had bruises on her face, and the powder was all over her face.
Yep.
So they chose to be realistic for that scene. I'm not sure why.
The only thing that didn't really add up was the fact that she had to peel the bag off of her face. I'm not really sure that's how that works.
Well, that's the comedy.
Yeah. We'll call it that.
She had to peel the bag off her face, but it was still like beat to crap out of, because that's what you can break your nose. You can break your nose with those things.
Yeah, you can actually be killed by him as far as that goes.
Hilarity ensues. So she goes through the house, and she hears what sounds like a party. There's music playing, and there's, like, party talking. So the first thing that you would do, of course, is grab a gun, which she did.
Absolutely.
So she goes, and she sees her husband in this huge indoor pool that they have in their house, and he's naked with a woman who is naked, and it's the same woman, this time travel doesn't make sense to me. It's the same woman that's her friend that gave her the drugs at the same party that she was at, that she just came back from. She drove home under the influence. That's why she crashed into the garage, by the way, because she's still under the influence of the drugs. But her friend gave her the drugs and maybe slipped out and went to go be with her husband.
Yeah.
So she's in the pool. They're naked. And the husband says, this is not what it looks like.
No, Jennifer, this is not the time for another one of your scenes.
My scene?
It's not what it looks like.
You have no clue what it looks like. You're doing her in the pool and I get Mr. Missionary? Jen, don't you Jen me. You You were supposed to be my friend. And now you're nothing but a porn star. Now I know why you wanted me to lighten my hair.
That's all.
Get out of here. I have to pick up my kids.
Jennifer, you have to take your share of responsibility for this, you know.
My share?
Yeah, I mean, have you any idea how lonely I've been while you've been off doing this book club thing?
You are just about to get lonelier.
No, because it couldn't possibly be what it looks like.
Chris, can you ever think of a situation where you would be naked in the pool with somebody other than your spouse or girlfriend, and you could get away with saying this is not what it looks like?
Not in this lifetime.
Now she's holding the gun too. She's already shot it through the glass. That's how she made her entrance. And he's holding a beach ball. Yeah. So he's covering his privates with a beach ball. He throws it away or something. He puts his hands in the air or something. And it bounces away, and she shoots the beach ball. So the next scene, of course, when they break up the fight, the friend runs out. She's naked. She runs out of the house, and then we see a scene of Buddy running out the house as well. She kicks him out of the marriage, kicks him out of the house. He puts on a cooking apron.
Nice.
Did he go to the kitchen and grab the cooking apron? Couldn't he just grab his shirt and shorts too from his room?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been just as simple. I mean,
but it wouldn't have been as funny.
That's true. Yeah,
you have to remember
timing is everything.
Yes. So now a song kicks in. It's our first of four montages in this film. Stallone with the montages. They still exist even with this film.
That's right.
So the montage kicks in, and she rearranges and cleans up the mess that she made with the gun and the glass. And the little living room next to the pool, she rearranges the living room in this little montage scene to make it look like now that she's single. This is the first thing she does. She kicks out her husband. Her best friend's cheating on her husband. She cleans up the gun mess, the glass mess, rearranges the room to be like, I'm a single woman now room.
She moves quick.
Yeah, this is crazy. So unbeknownst to her, her father just got killed in the restaurant. Her best friend is cheating on her husband. Now there's a knock. She's just put her head down to relax after this busy day. There's a knock on the door. She opens it, screams, and slams it shut because on the other side is Frankie or Sylvester Stallone.
Ma'am, please, if you don't mind.
Hello.
You're hurt.
Yes, ma'am.
You're bleeding rather profusely.
Well, that's what happens when you get shot.
Shot?
Yes.
You've been shot?
Definitely, but it's not as bad as it looks, really.
Well, you're at the wrong house. It's the wrong neighborhood. You want Queens, maybe Brooklyn.
I'm not waiting. I'm at the right house. Jennifer. Man.
Then she opens the door again. So we learned here that they've never met. They don't know who the other person is. Right away. But they figure out after a few changes of dialogue that, yes, she's seen him carrying groceries at Angelo's grocery store. That was his cover, I guess, as a mafia boss.
I know you, don't I?
Yes, ma'am, you do.
I'm sorry, I can't remember your name.
Frankie Delano.
Oh, right, Frankie. You used to deliver groceries for Angelo when I was a girl.
Yes, ma'am. I knew you when you were a kid, ma'am. The news, I heard you presumed.
Come again?
I presume you heard the news.
What news?
Get a television.
Right.
So, you know, when she does her shopping, of course she goes shopping at Angelo's. Angelo to her is just the grocery store owner who lives down the street or whatever.
Right.
And Frankie is the the built...
well-dressed bag boy.
Yes. who's now 56. There was a picture of him carrying groceries next to her looking at fruit. I'm not sure who took that... Because we learned that he's the watcher of her, but I guess somebody was watching him watching her that took the photo. Okay. All right, so he's bleeding from the side of his... And so he's bleeding. He's a complete stranger, but she lets him in anyways.
No, she's got a good heart.
Right. But they banter at the door. She goes, you can't come in here like this bleeding. This isn't Brooklyn or Queens. Yeah. Again, the comedy.
Right.
He tells her to turn on the news, and she goes, oh, that nice old man at the grocery store is dead? And Frank goes, yeah, it's a mafia hit. He lies on the counter, and then he gets up again, but we see where he shot is actually the same place that he was shot during Rambo 3.
Ah.
Yeah. That's a favorite wound for him. It must be his good side.
Yeah.
for the lighting, what have you.
That's right.
So now he asks her, do you have a DVD player? And she's like, a DVD player? Yes, a DVD player.
Sources close to the investigation tell Mobile 8's news team that it had the trademark signs of a mob hit.
That nice old man? We've got to get you to a hospital.
It's, not necessary.
The police?
Oh, definitely not necessary.
Well, so what do we do? Well, you were shot. Okay. That's what you said, right?
Oh, ma'am, do you happen to have a DVD player?
DVD?
Yes, ma'am, a DVD player.
It's been shot.
Shot?
Yeah.
DVD's been shot. There's a lot of that going around tonight.
And she's like, well, I shot it. Oh, and then she, but then Frankie goes, well, you have one in your master bedroom. And she's like, how do you know this? They go up to the room to put in the DVD, and this is the documentary that he was filming at the beginning. This is what we're led to believe. But what I love is that they filmed it on tape, but they figured out a way to put it on DVD.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. Good. Yeah, it's pretty good for 2002.
Yeah.
The DVD comes on, and we see Anthony Quinn's character, Angelo, of course, explaining who he is and who he is to her. And, of course, she can't believe it. She's now drinking Jack Daniels along with Stallone, who's sewing himself up a la Rambo style in the bedroom.
That's right.
And she goes, have you done this before? He's like, yeah, Rambo First Blood Part 1.
That's right. I even cauterized it in Part 3.
Oh, and so he's already drunk when he goes up there. Apparently he's been drinking before he even got to the house, because he says, I apologize for anything I say. I'm drunk to dull the pain. Yep. And then right after that, he compliments her breasts.
Which I can't say that I wouldn't do the same thing, drunk or sober.
I'm a little drunk and goofy from the loss of blood, so if I happen to say something out of line, I like to apologize ahead of time. Great breasts, absolutely great. They're like champagne glasses.
Apology accepted.
Oh, sorry.
But that's a great out. He goes, excuse me. He actually says, excuse me for anything I might say because I'm drunk. You got fantastic breasts. They're like champagne bottles.
Oh, my God.
So that's your out. Apparently, you can just get away with anything if you're inebriated. Inebriated. What's that word? I don't know what that word is. So
inebriated?
Thank you. Man, I'm terrible at words. So the DVD plays itself out. She finds out who she is. She's in shock, whatever. She drinks Jack Daniels, passes out drunk. Cue the next day. Sly apparently is a master chef. So yes. We see him come home with 3 bags of groceries, go into the kitchen, which appears to be barren, and then it cuts to all laid out with all this food, and he's in there like Chef Gordon from Hell's Kitchen, baking up a huge breakfast.
That's right. Well, he's Italian. You know they can cook.
Well, of course. And so he takes his breakfast up on a tray up to her, and she's like, I don't eat this kind of breakfast. He goes, I know, you only like burnt dry toast with a little bit of butter.
I got Italian eggs, alla milanese, a little polenta, a little biscotti, a little ricotta, and a lot of espresso.
I don't eat that stuff.
I know, you have a black coffee, dry toast, no butter, jam once a week.
How do you know that?
At least it's gonna get cold.
Sorry.
More, he's just giving away the fact that he's a stalker.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he's quite explained yet that I was charged to watch you. It gets explained later. Whether it was done now or not, it doesn't. It's all
right.
Right. He mentions her dad, and that breaks. They did a little bit of build. They built a little bit of bond.
Big house.
Is that your way of asking me why there's no one here? Well, my son's off at military school, if you can believe it. At 7. My husband's idea. Well, my husband's away. That's my idea. You really like cooking?
No, I love cooking. You ought to try the polenta. It's great for gaining weight. Your father always wanted you to eat more.
My father?
You know Angelo.
That's it. Enough already, Frankie, with a father, whatever your name is. He is not my father. Do you understand? I have a real-life father who lives 5 miles from you.
It lasted for about 2 minutes of her kind of relaxing with him. And this is a complete... They have only known each other for 12 hours.
Right.
Like, in person. Like, he's known her for 44 years.
Yep. Trace her every move.
That's right. Like, enough that he knows what she eats for breakfast and that she has a DVD player in the master bedroom. But she's known him for 12 hours.
Right.
Not even. He's bringing her breakfast in bed.
It's a good reason to be creeped out a little bit.
Sure. So she freaks out about the dad thing again. She snaps out of it, goes, what am I doing here? I gotta get out of here. You leave my house. When I come back, I don't want you to be here. I need to go shopping. I need to take my mind off this. Of note, Sly is wearing his sweater tucked in.
You paid so close attention to detail here.
Yeah, there's a few pictures of him on the internet during that time when he's got the old sweater tucked in to the belt.
Yeah. There.
So she goes to the mall. And she goes to the mall to the shoe store, of course, and we know she's mega rich because she goes there. She goes, I have an unlimited card. I want to buy every shoe you have in my size in this store.
May I help you? And your name would be? Allison. Enchanting. Allison, may I see everything you have inside in a size 7? Everything? I want to melt this mother to the ground. Cassidy, we have a no limit on our hands. I'm going to need backup.
So this is like, I guess, Pretty Woman if she was rich.
Yeah.
So a little bit of comedy ensues because all these girls bring all these shoe boxes, and then you see her hold up this shoe. And then another little mini dream sequence opens up where the shoe floats out of her hand, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay, you follow me? And so,
I just don't follow the movie.
Then the shoe explodes the way a bird would explode. Yep. I swear there was feathers.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I feel like what was happening here is that the director, in certain parts of this movie, thought that he was making some kind of artsy film. Because, I mean, honestly, for what this scene ends up being, what was the point of a slow motion sequence such as that?
I don't know. I think there's a little bit of CGI, I think, with the floating shoe, and then it explodes, yeah. And then it snaps out into reality that somebody is shooting at her through the glass. Again, another shot through the glass. The glass explodes. This hitman sprays bullets into the shoe store, gets the shoe, mind you, but misses her.
Right.
She falls to the canvas or to the floor, and then out flies Sly from, I guess, the change room.
He's a terrible bodyguard, but he's a great stalker.
He flies through the air, and I guess this would have been considered, or maybe this was like a big action shot, and it's like one of the only ones in the film, mind you.
Yep.
This is like the shot. This is like the equivalent of the highway scene in Matrix Part 2. That's right. this is the big shot. This is, I don't know, the exploding arrow scene in Rambo Part 2.
Right.
Now, we see Stallone fly. Now, I slowed this scene down. The actor, or the person flying through that scene, was not Sylvester.
Right.
Which I found interesting, because this is I could do the stunt.
Yeah.
There's just a bunch of squibs blowing up around this guy as he goes through slow motion, dives in the... So he dives through the hail of bullets as they explode around him. This guy can just not shoot straight. He just wants to spray bullets in the store, hoping to hit something, but hits nothing other than the shoe and then the displays.
Yeah.
Stallone then lands on Jennifer, Madeline Stowe.
Not a bad place to land.
Sure, it's a soft landing. So he's on top of her, like a body shield, but then the shooter's nowhere to be seen. Now, this is what I don't understand. This guy has already... Like, again, another public shooting. This is big time news. If you think about how big... Think about how much this is big news. A hail of bullets in the mall in 2002? This isn't small town news.
Right.
But this guy just, again, no cameras. He's not even masked. He just walks into a mall, sprays bullets, and walks out.
It's amazing.
The brazenness of these guys are equally brazen and terrible shots.
This scene is a really great example of what I was saying earlier about... nowhere in this scene is there a signature Stallone at all. I just... Because we know what his action sequences are like, and they're usually really good.
And he does his own stunts. He did them in Expendables years later. He's done them in Rambo. But for whatever reason, he did not do the fly through the air scene.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't want his wig to fall off.
Oh.
Well, he doesn't listen. He doesn't listen to our show. Come on, let's be serious.
If he did before, he ain't going to anymore.
Hey, you know what? If he does, it's a joke. I'm sure he can take a joke. And if it's not a wig, all I can say is whatever product they put in the hair, it just made it look like a wig. That's got to be fair. That's got to be fair. That's all I'm saying.
And
all
as, right. as a side note, we were Team Stallone, so that should be something in our favor.
Yes, Mr. Stallone, we're Team Stallone. Okay. They leave the mall in the car in her car. Stallone's like, I got to protect you. And she's like, just take me to my parents' house, the adoptive parents' house.
Maybe it's my fault, ma'am. Maybe they followed me and I led them to you.
Oh, great. Just great. Until I met you, I was perfectly capable of shopping for shoes without someone trying to kill me. What is that cologne you're wearing? Is it Brute? Oh, don't tell me it's Brute.
You know, ma'am, can we be just quiet for a couple of seconds, please?
Well, I am on edge, you know.
Yeah, well, I understand, but I'm really getting a terrible headache, really.
Oh, well, pardon me, all over the place. 5 seconds ago, I almost didn't even have a head. And what's with this? This? Don't shrug, speak.
Look, ma'am, what you're doing is you're having this panic attack syndrome, and that often happens after a hit, really.
You know all about those things, don't you? You're a hitman, right? Is that what you are?
No, ma'am, actually, see, a hitman takes a life. I'm a bodyguard, and a bodyguard protects it.
So you were my father's bodyguard, mm-hmm. and he got waxed. And so now you're my bodyguard? Oh, well, that just fills me with confidence.
I'm like getting a major league freaking migraine.
Do you have any idea how powerful my father is? He is a very successful New York businessman who will make your life a living hell.
It's getting there. Look, ma'am, please, I'm sorry. You don't have to do that. It's a...
I want to see my father now.
Your father was Angel.
Take me to my father's house now!
She goes there, and there's the mom. We're thinking, oh, it's going to be a little bit of a family comedy, but this is the only scene with the mom. And the mother says, your dad's not here. He's having a gay affair with a guy at the club.
Mother? In here, dear. My God, did you hear what happened at the mall? It was a shootout. Just think of it.
I have, really. I need to talk to you and Daddy immediately.
I think I just heard your father return from his racquetball lesson.
When did Daddy start playing racquetball?
Your father's having an affair at the club with the racquetball instructor.
How old is she?
Well, the she is a he.
The wow, racquetball instructor.
Revelation.
Yeah. And she doesn't seem too upset about it. She just goes back to watering her plants.
Right. It's like, better him than me.
She comes in frantic, not even explaining what's happened to her. Oh, so she gets blindsided by the information. And then her dad comes down the stairs. And in a very cliche, terrible gay voice, I don't know how else to say it, Jen!
Oh my
Jen,
God.
Jen! He goes, looking fabulous!
Jen, Jen? Is that you?
Daddy?
Jen, Jen! Hello, loved one! My, my! Someone is looking fabulous!
Daddy, don't take this in a bad way, but have you switched affiliations?
Oh, this doesn't change anything between us. After all, I'm still your father. I'm feeling better than ever, thank you. He's got me into great shape, don't you think?
Yeah.
This is bad. Are we supposed to think this is funny, though? Like, this is a gay person. Oh, look at somebody being gay!
Right.
Hilarious! It's a gay character.
You know, there's moments in this movie that are funny, you know, per se, and then there's moments that are supposed to be funny that are just really awkward.
There is one funny scene. There was one scene, I think, one that made me laugh. And it did make me, there was another scene that made me laugh because I couldn't believe they're doing it. Okay. He says, yes, I am the guy from the racquetball instructor, and he's gotten me into great shape.
Ugh.
It's terrible.
Totally cliche.
So she goes out to the car where Stallone is, you know, exasperated because her parents are nuts, apparently. He's like, well, what do they say? And she goes, well, they didn't say anything because I can't deal with them right now.
There's something completely irrational about all men.
No kidding. So what do they say?
Exactly what I expected, thank you. They said that they are indeed my parents and that you, Mr. Mafia Pants, are full of it. So there. The emotional extortion doesn't go past here. And furthermore, when my turn
again. Tell me something, ma'am. Is there a place where people go to learn how to behave like this, talking all the time in a manner designed to, like, induce a migraine in Iraq?
I will not be talked to like
don't
this.
Don't you understand this is not the real you?
This is to me!
Really? Do you know what is you?
Don't kill my parents.
They're not your parents.
Please promise me you won't wax them.
For the record, it's not wax, it's whack.
And then the father comes out and sees Frankie, and then he starts talking to Frankie in normal guy tone voice.
How you doing, Whitney?
Pretty well, Frankie. And you?
Been better.
Yeah, I hear.
Look good, Whitney. You taking care of yourself?
I always did notice the details, Frankie.
Wait. You two weren't lovers.
Yeah. It's like again, another different movie, different script. What just happened here?
Was this filmed out of sequence? Was he straight during this filming?
I feel like that's what happened here.
And then he was gay later.
He was gay later.
Because he talks to Sloane in a normal, I hate to say normal, but it's just, there's no effeminate voice character. He's like, he's gay with his daughter, because like, I'm a gay man now, but then he talks to Frankie. Hey, what up, Frank?
Yeah. It's just so weird.
And then Jen sees, oh, they've known each other. And then, of course, the father confirms that, yes, this is what happened. So she goes, so she's got the confirmation she's needed.
Simply put, when Angelo brought you to us, you were the most beautiful baby girl. You took my finger and sat right on my lap. And you kept saying the only word you knew. Pretty. Pretty over and over. And of course, we took you. We would have taken you without the money, although the money has been endlessly spectacular. I've really given you nothing, Jen-Jen. Nothing except my old, ridiculous heart.
There you go.
Yep.
Now we go back to the scene. Oh, I guess it was kind of a touching scene where the father, her adoptive father says, yes, you know, we adopted you, we kept this life to protect you, and we love you like our own daughter, and they hug each other, and that was the closure on the parents for the rest of the movie.
Yep.
Now we cut to supper. So remember where Sly made breakfast? Well, he's now making supper.
That's right.
And he's like body slamming the dough. and then he uses the gun, the handle of his gun, and he pistol whips the clams.
That's right.
And it causes an accidental discharge of his weapon into the wall. Again,
which
maybe
makes
he's
neurotic Jen scream.
Yes, well, it would make me scream. A gunshot goes off in your house.
Absolutely.
So she's on the phone with her son at the military school. A gunshot goes off. So again, we see that Stallone's character, good watcher, good cook, but a terrible gunman and bodyguard.
Yes.
So was that supposed to be funny again that an accidental discharge happened from his weapon?
Yeah, I think this is one of those things where it's kind of like he's in his real job, which was, you know, this mafia guy and all that, he's kind of a stumble bum.
You know what I mean? Okay. Hilarious.
But yet he's this really great watcher.
Yes. He's really good at watching. He did tell her that in the years that he watched her, he always made sure to turn away when she dressed. That's how much he watched her.
Like, oh boy.
We were told that him and Angelo would just sit in the yard looking at her.
Right. Creepy.
You know what? I love my kids, but I hate watching them.
Right.
Like, I would be the worst mafia father, because I'd be like, you know, maybe I would hire somebody to watch my kids. That's actually the best way to raise them.
Yeah.
Here's a lump of money. I'll have somebody protect you, and I'll send you a Christmas card when I die.
And honestly, it seems like there was so much overkill on having her watched, considering the fact that he went to the extent of placing her with, you know, two people who didn't have kids under a completely different identity. It just seems so odd that they had to go to that length.
Yeah, it's so they have a little talk at supper. He makes her supper. He lights candles for her. They have this again. He's in love with her, unbeknownst to her at this time. He's been in love with her for 44 years, or I guess whenever she came of age. So let's say when she turned 15, and he would have been 27.
Yeah,
is that right? Is my math right? Yeah, sure. Well, let's make her legal. He officially fell in love with her when she was 18, and he was 31 or 30.
There you go.
Okay,
that sounds better.
Yeah, in light of recent events, it's probably better. So, right. He goes to talk about their childhood a little bit, about one of her boyfriends or something, and one of the guys that tried to cop a feel on her, and it was, she mentioned the song, and he says, no, it was the Bon Jovi song, You Gave Love a Bad Name.
Now what?
Look, your father's dead because I didn't do my job, and it's not going to happen again. No way. And I see you got a guest house out there. If you don't mind, I'd like to move in. Because I don't trust anybody. There's danger everywhere. Everywhere I look. The night of the thousand eyes.
Excuse me. You stole that line.
I know, from Bobby V. Remember when you tell those little white lies?
The night has a thousand eyes. Yes, I do. That was plain when Peter Hackbert was trying to get under my blouse. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
No.
What?
Actually, it wasn't your blouse. It was a bulky knit green sweater. And what was playing was Bon Jovi's biggest hit to date, You Give Love a Bad Name.
So I did the math on this. This is where it gets insane. She would have been 29 during the release of that song.
Yeah.
And he would have been 44. That song that song came out in 87. So they're not playing their ages in this film.
No. Which I think, you know, like Madeline can get away with that much more than Stallone can.
He looked good for 56, but there's no way he's 35 in this film.
No.
That's what they were going for that in this film. That he was in his 30s and so was she.
Yeah, the consistency in this script is pretty bad.
Yeah, it's insane. Oh, so then he goes, I will move into the guest house to protect you.
Well, move right on in.
Why wouldn't he just live in the main house? What, like,
yeah.
It's like me living in my garage to take care of my kids live in the main house.
Right.
Like, he's already cooking her supper and breakfast. Why does he just crash on the couch? He's living in the guest house.
He's leaving himself open to make more mistakes.
And they come. So this all takes place in one day. From the time of death of her father to the discovery of her parents' affairs and all this stuff, the shootout in the mall and the supper at the end of the day, this is all one day.
Yeah.
Now it's the first night, and he's, of course, on guard duty. She's sleeping in bed, and we see a guy sneak into the house. And we're led to believe it's going to be a hitman to kill her.
Right.
Let me go back to the mall scene. I wanted to mention this real quick. So this guy sprays bullets in there, and Stallone's on top of her, completely not looking around. Why didn't the guy just step 4 feet into the store and just shoot them up on the floor?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It just makes no sense.
He might have run out of ammunition with that spray of bullets.
He might have. He's no Rambo.
Yeah, no. So the husband walks in. So it's the husband that's walking in.
Right.
And he's about to go to her, but Stallone grabs him. And a big fight ensues, and he's like, who is this guy? And he kind of explains who he is, and she's like, this is my bodyguard or whatever.
I know this sack of shit.
This sack of shit is my husband!
All right. Now, you want me to take care of this problem once and for all?
Seriously?
No, seriously. Why don't you go back to bed, and let me do my job. You have a shovel downstairs?
A shovel?
Yeah, something I can dig a hole with.
What the hell is going on? Who the hell are you? Who the hell is this? Do you have a boyfriend already?
This is Frankie. He's my bodyguard.
Look, who are you, and what is that smell?
It's brute.
Well, it's overwhelming.
Ma'am, you don't have to tell him anything.
Hey, you cannot talk to me in my house like that.
It's her house.
Darling, I have to talk to you.
And we find out that this guy has been fooling around forever on her. That's basically the gist of it. Because Stallone said, because he trusted, I've only done it this one time, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Stallone starts shooting his gun. In the house. So basically what the husband was saying is, I only fooled you on this one time. Stallone shoots it to the ceiling. Says, wrong.
Darling, I have to talk to you. Does he have to be here?
He's just doing his job.
What job? I am your husband. Do you mind, please?
Sorry, Kipster.
Look, yesterday, that was simply an aberration. Fermented by the consumption of too much single malt scotch on an empty stomach. An aberration of marital ethics for which I am truly, truly grievous.
Was it the only time?
Oh, absolutely.
August 14th, the airport hotel.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Swedish flight attendant. But that was the only other time.
December 5th, Four Seasons.
Ah. Oh. Right, yeah, the real estate lady, but she was a nooner, my only nooner, I swear to God. The sky is falling, all right, it's been going on for years.
Get out.
You should go.
Then fine.
What about the time at the airport? And he goes, yeah, that time too. And that was the only time. Shoots it again, wrong. What about the time with the librarian down the road or what? So, this is about four times. After the fourth time, the chandelier falls to the ground. So we find out this guy is just a perpetual cheater. He's a creep. So she kicks him out again. And so now they're sitting on the stairs. He says to Madeline Stowe, he goes, I believe in two things. The kindness of the saints and that there is somebody for everybody.
There he goes.
The past.
The future. Manless.
Nah, there'll be other men.
I don't want other men.
I believe in two things. The kindness of the saints, and there's somebody for everybody.
Do you have a someone, Frankie?
Sort of.
That's nice. Everyone should have someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm. How poetic.
Is it?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go with that.
It's a poor guy. It's a romantic.
You can tell that he's... Yeah, you know he picked that up from Anthony. You just know that's where that came from. Or Angelo, in this case.
Right. So the next scene is they're at the funeral. Everyone's there, even the guy that killed the guy.
Right.
So, but we don't know who killed him. We just know that it was a mafia hit. I mean, Stallone's character doesn't know who killed Angelo.
Right.
So this was the one line that made me laugh. This was the one sequence that was genuinely funny. This scene would have belonged in a movie that was funny like this throughout the whole movie. This would have been another great scene throughout the movie that I think this movie was trying to be. This scene was what the movie was trying to be, I think.
Why is everybody looking like they hate me?
I think you're Angelo's mistress.
How does that feel like a whore in a Catholic church?
We all do.
That is actually fantastic comedy.
It is, yep.
So that scene and setup was like, I think that scene, that 25-second scene, was what the movie was trying to be.
Yeah.
And if they could have just made that work for 50 more scenes, we would have had a really good comedy.
That's right.
Now we go into a funeral montage where we see Angelo and Stallone with all these kind of flashbacks. However, all the flashbacks, the characters are the same age as they are at the start of the film. That's always a movie trope that I think is kind of funny when they show pictures on the mantle or whatever. It's always the actor's age during the film of the film.
Right.
So all the scenes that Frankie is thinking about of Angelo and him happened in the last week.
He has a really bad memory.
Yeah. Or maybe the best moments were his like final moments filmed in the documentary. Who knows?
That's right.
So in this movie, from Angelo, so we hear a line from Angelo speaking to him about his daughter, Jen. He tells Frankie, Angelo says to Frankie, hey, you need to keep your distance from her. Keep the distance. Don't get close to her.
Keep the distance. Always the distance.
So in Rocky, he goes the distance, but in Avenging Angelo, he has to keep the distance.
Exactly.
Anything else about the funeral you want to talk about? I hope people aren't bored. I hope they're not, because we're only one third of the way through this. But I.
That's right. Whether they like it or not, they're going to sit through it.
If you guys want to turn it off, by all means, turn it off. We're getting to our first Stallone kill. So hang in there, folks. So next night, this is the night of the funeral. A guy sneaks into the yard, tries to climb up the wall. Stallone pulls him down and breaks his neck.
Yep.
And this is where another comedy scene comes up. This one is unreal. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Okay. What?
Squirrels.
Okay. So Stallone breaks the guy's neck, puts him in a wheelbarrow, pushes the wheelbarrow to whatever location, then throws the guy over his shoulder, and you hear Madeline Stowe call out, Frankie, what is that sound? What's going on out there? And he goes, nothing, ma'am. All's fine. And then out of the blue, the guy farts.
Frankie, what's that noise?
Just take it out the trash, ma'am.
Frankie, did you say something?
Nothing, ma'am. I didn't say anything.
Over his shoulder. Stallone has the dead guy, now, do corpses fart? Is that a thing?
I don't have a whole lot of experience with corpses, but I would assume probably not.
My understanding is
when you die that you like lose all your bowels and everything, so I don't know that there would be anything left to... who knows? I mean,
well, this character's name was Frankie Two Beans. I don't know.
Frankie Two Beans. Oh God!
So this guy farts, and it's apparently it's loud enough that she calls out, "What did you say?"
Right.
When has anyone ever mistaken a fart for a conversation?
Yeah, right.
It's like, hey, honey, what time are you gonna be home today from work? Okay, 5 o'clock it is.
Right. I can't correlate be anywhere near each other. I just don't get it.
But yeah, she was at least 50 feet away. So yeah. She hears this thing, and she goes, "What's that? Say again? Come again?" And so he's about to turn around with the guy, and he farts again.
Yeah.
And then kinda. Stallone punches the guy's bum.
Clearly this guy was more than Frankie Two-Bean.
I'll say this much. Maybe there are listeners who have gone this far with us who now want to see this movie. That's right.
We might be driving him away from this one.
Oh, I don't know. So he dumps the body in the guest house, puts it under the bed, okay? She comes running out of her house to his guest house, knocks on the door. She's just not convinced that there's nothing going on. And she's feeling scared, I guess, because it's been a big day. So she comes in the house. The body's under the bed. She's lying on the couch in some sort of therapy session, as we're led to believe, talking about her life and everything, and Stallone's character sitting on the chair listening. And then under the bed, the body farts again. We're not done.
Frankie! Frankie!
Yeah?
May I come in?
All right.
Frankie, it's not exactly warm out here, you know?
You okay?
Peach, I feel like I'm in the brute center of the universe.
I'm sorry, but...
No, Frankie, I am so frightened.
I'm here, ma'am.
Yeah, of course. You know what's kind of terrific about being frightened like this?
No.
Well, at least now I'm frightened about something specific, like being whacked, as opposed to the non-specific variety, which is what I usually feel, like that kind of dread, the free-floating whatnot and all. Mm-hmm. I remember as a little girl being afraid, very afraid. Little boogeymen under the bed and devils in the closet. Isn't it amazing how our innermost fears turn into this Freudian... Did you say something?
No.
This joke has not run out of gas.
Yeah, this guy is clearly has even after death, has a very bad flatulence issue. And again, I'm not so sure how realistic that is.
Well, he's still farting, you know, 20 minutes after his passing.
Yeah.
He may have passed from this life, but he's not done passing gas.
That's right.
So she goes, "What's that, Frankie?" She keeps thinking, apparently... Frankie sounds like a fart, because she still thinks he's talking. He then goes to explain.
Did you say something?
No.
Amazing Freudian nuances of memory and consciousness. When I was growing up, they sent me to an analyst. Everybody was going to an analyst at the time. He said, Dr. Gilmore was his name. He said, it's not so much that, well, never mind what he said. I lied to him all the time, because, you know, I didn't want him telling my parents what was going on.
Ma'am.
Frankie?
We got squirrels.
Squirrels, Frankie?
Yes, ma'am. Big squirrels. They tend to overeat, preparing for a difficult winter, and sometimes they bloat, and often they get caught in the walls.
Huh?
And to get out of the walls, they have to deflate, and thus this is causing the passage of windage.
Oh. Oh, poor things.
Yeah. Tough luck.
There's squirrels that are in the walls, and they need to deflate. I can't do this.
This is horrible. They need to deflate.
they need to deflate after they eat too much to get out of the walls, so they do passage of windage, he says.
Passage of windage. Oh, you know, of all the lines that Stallone has recited in films, that might take the cake.
He went from punching a guy's bum to explaining the passage of windage in squirrels.
Yeah.
All right, so he dumps the body in the ocean while she's sleeping. And the ocean apparently is right next to the house. We see him go out the ocean, dump the body. Now we're at an opera.
Yeah, very Italian.
He goes out to the lounge to meet a guy with 2 dozen roses, because he wants this guy to come in when the show, when everyone's clapping in the show, to give her a 2 dozen roses. So life goes on. He still wants to Stallone the girl. At the end of the show, that author has come back. He's now back again in this film. He throws her a white rose.
Can you believe it? He threw me a rose. A white rose.
Yeah, it's nice, but I always thought the red ones were the special ones.
Oh, no, you don't understand. White is special. It's pure. Not like red ones. Everybody gets red roses.
Oh, boy.
And she's like, oh, white roses. That's amazing. And Stallone's like, well, what about red roses? He goes, no, everyone gets a red rose. White roses are amazing. So the guy comes with the roses, and he shoos them away, saying, oh, wrong time. So... And then we go back to them again talking. They're at the opera still. And then the author's there. And there's all these girls around him with books. And he's signing books again. So this guy is at an opera, but he's also turned the opera into a book signing again.
Yeah. Opportunist.
Yeah. Hey, it's an opportunist.
Opportunist.
I really hope we have a listener still who got that joke, because I don't know who's gone the distance with this episode. He's now telling Madeline Stowe over this little chit chat. They're just sitting talking, having wine, and he says that he danced with her mother when she was pregnant with her.
So how'd you like the opera?
Oh, more than I could have imagined.
Yeah, well, Angela loved it.
My father, was he handsome when he was young?
Yeah, very. And your mother, she'd be able to walk across the room and everything would just stop. And I remember the one time at this wedding, she made me dance with her.
Were you embarrassed?
Of course I was embarrassed. I was just a kid, but, you know, she was pregnant with you.
Well, actually, that means you were the first person I ever danced with.
I guess.
I like that.
Right.
And he was just a kid, so he was 12 years old, according to my math. The author comes in and swoons over her. They swoon over each other. He's just, for whatever reason, we find out later, but for whatever reason, this author is just fixated on Jen. She's fixated, of course, on him because he's a celebrity author. And they ask each other to go on a date. And, of course, Stallone is upset about the date.
Are you together?
Yes. No. He's the...
Security consultant.
You mean the bodyguard? I'm no good at pretending. Been watching each other, so forgive me if I cause offense, bearing my heart and telling the truth. You see my soul as the naked before you.
Maybe you ought to go back to his table and get dressed so he doesn't catch a cold.
He's just joking.
You are Jennifer Barrett, yes?
Yes, I am.
I wanted to thank you for arranging my wedding at your club, but you seemed, how shall I say, distracted.
I'm such a great admirer of yours. I've read all of your books over and over and
Miss Barrett.
Over. What? Jennifer.
May I call you?
Yeah. Oh, Jelly.
And then now they're back at the house, having more drinks. They're just talking. It's Frankie and Jen. They're talking about the past, and she mentions that she had a boyfriend that cheated on him that got beaten up. We are led to believe that was Frankie. We see a flashback scene of Frankie throwing the guy into a garbage bin.
Did you have anything to do with Bobby Jordan?
Excuse me?
Bobby Jordan.
Bobby Jordan. Bobby Jordan. No. I can't recall it. Bobby Jordan. No.
I went with him in high school. He was cheating on me the whole time. I was so crazy about him, I swear I would have married him. And then he just got strange one day.
No! No! No, Frankie! No, Frankie! No!
He stopped talking to me.
Young guys can go through this neurotic phase.
Well, it's not just guys.
And then she had a schoolmate who... gossiped about her, gossip about her being a slut, and Stallone's character lit that teen girl's car on fire.
What about Polly Peters? Do you remember her?
No, I never heard of her. Polly Peters, no.
Well, she was this mean, nasty witch who started spreading all these awful stories about me sleeping around. She was destroying my reputation.
Yeah, we know the most fragile thing in the world is a woman's reputation.
Well, it all stopped. Right after this terrible thing happened to her car. It's like she just sort of upped and moved to another school.
What a rebel.
Yeah, so this guy, beating up teens and blowing up their cars as a watcher.
Yeah.
And then that night...
only he'd gone to those lengths with Angelo before he got shot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he was good at protecting the girl, but terrible at protecting Angelo, yeah. So now we've got another failed hit attempt. This is fail hit number 3, but this is body count 2. The guy comes in, there's a bit of a shootout, they push the guy off the balcony, and now together, both Jen and Stallone's character Frankie are disposing of the body together. And for whatever reason, they take the Zodiac, put the body in the Zodiac, and they send out the Zodiac on its own. They deflate it so it sinks out about 30 feet away. It sinks with the body. Why did they just throw the body out like he did before? He hid the body from her the first time, but right. Now they're in on this together, right? So they get rid of the body together, but now they've gotten rid of their boat in the process. Do they think there's not going to be any more bodies to bury at sea?
Right.
So now she's feeling tough because she's got her first kill, or she's around her first dead body. Now she wants to literally kill the mafia king who killed her dad, her real dad. Yep.
So you think you got this vengeance thing all figured out? You know how it's done?
Done? Oh, you mean the thing?
No.
No, not really.
Well, it's not as easy as it looks.
There's all kinds of courage, you know?
I know.
A woman's courage should never be underestimated. Ever be underestimated.
Ever.
Let's go over it again.
Go over what?
Plan. We go to the Valhalla Inn. You wait in the parking lot. I walk in. My tester takes a good look at me. He thinks he could have any woman because he's a little tweaked, you know, even at his age. I bat my eyes, and then I whack him.
And you think you can do this?
Do I think I can do this?
Okay. Show me.
Frankie allows this plan to take place.
Which makes no sense.
It's weird. He's like, I'll be in the parking lot. You go into the hotel, and she's dressed to kill.
Oh, yes.
She is dressed to kill. So she goes into the hotel where the mafia, like all everyone that's in this town in the mafia, is here at this hotel. She walks in, and I guess nobody knows that she's the daughter of Angelo. She knows that the mafia dude, the kingpin guy, is a sucker for younger women, as most men are, especially at his age. He's 60 or 70 or 80 or whatever.
Right.
So he goes over there, gets a table with her, and right away the mafia guy like grabs her boob.
Just all kinds of inappropriateness here.
Yeah, and he gets a heart attack in the process.
Right.
Now, this is the second scene that I thought was funny. He's dying of a heart attack. She starts blowing cigarette smoke in his face in the process.
Right. Let's just speed that up along here.
She's like, let me, she actually says, let me help you. And she starts breathing cigarette smoke into his face. Of course, the guy that killed Angelo, the hitman there, he's like, oh, enough helping already. So they go to the hospital. He recovers. Now they find themselves at the church. The Mafia King has recovered from the heart attack. This is the same night. He's been released from the hospital. They've now kidnapped a Catholic priest, and they force this Catholic priest to marry her to him in this church. It's an illegal wedding all the same, but he wants to pretend it's real because he wants to make an honest woman of her that night. So now they're at the Mafia leader's house, and she's told to put on this red lingerie.
Yes.
And of course, Stallone has now followed her to the house. I can't believe he's allowed this to continue, where she's now in the enemy lair of the house, literally about to get, quite frankly, about to get assaulted by this guy.
Yeah.
He's lying in bed. He's just suffered a heart attack. He's hooked up to a heart rate machine and everything. He's in his bathrobe. I want you to go slow because, you know, I just had a heart attack. I need you to go slow. But it's time to mount the baloney pony. She disrobes very quickly.
Yes.
And she finishes the heart attack that started in the restaurant. He dies on the bed.
Works every time.
Now this is death count 3. She's killed the man that's killed her father just by, you know, if looks could kill, they killed him. So she jumps off the balcony in heels. A goon does the same thing but gets mauled by a dog in the process. She gets away. The guy that gets mauled by the dog has perfect cuts on his jeans. Like, you could just tell, like, somebody from the clothing department just literally took scissors and cut his jeans.
Exactly.
So Stallone now comes flying out of nowhere with his car door open, smacks the guy down to the ground who's about to shoot at them. She gets in the car, they drive off, and she says, I killed him. He's like, I can't believe you killed him. I can't believe he let her go in there all by herself. Let's be serious here.
Yeah, like I said, it's just like haphazard protection here. I don't understand. It's like, especially after all these attempts that have been made, why would you allow this to happen?
And she goes, and he goes, how did you kill him? And she says, I married him to death.
I married him to death.
Oh, well, Stallone knows a few of those type of marriages, I guess.
Oh!
Another song happens. They're at home drinking, celebrating. The author calls and says, hey, do you want to go for a date? I know it's late. So she's done all this, and now she's going out again with the author the same night.
Yeah.
And we see a montage of her on the date with this guy later and Stallone gardening.
Yeah. Weird.
But he's like mad gardening.
Right.
Throwing out peat moss and shoveling angrily and but does pretty good yard work, but he does it very angrily though, because he's thinking about the date that she's having with the author.
That's right.
So she comes back and she's like, I'm gonna go to Sicily with this guy. He's like, oh, sorry, before we get there, death count 4. The hitman, Bruno, comes to the house, and we see Frankie in the guest room holding a book. He's holding the author's book.
Oh, yeah.
And the hitman comes in and says, all right, I found out who you are and where you are, and you're protecting Angelo's daughter. We're here to finish it up, blah, blah, blah.
How you doing, Bruno?
Want to know what the old man's last words were? Try the clams. They're fabulous. You got any last words?
You ever read this book?
If I read that book, not only does that insult my intelligence, it insults my ignorance. Why would a man like me, who happens to like himself, be caught dead reading a bit of boy toy fluff like that?
Because it's a killer.
Now, this is what... Remember the garage that she drove into earlier in the film?
Yep.
Well, it comes into play here again. That's Stallone's right. Character buries the body behind new brick as he fixes the garage. And then she pulls into the driveway, and he hurriedly puts the feet stick out, and he kicks them in real quick and fixes the wall real quick. Why is he hiding the body?
Right.
They've already disposed of a body together. She's killed the other guy, but now he's doesn't want her. I don't want you to see me burying a body in your garage wall that is going to stink in about 3 months.
Right. Well, again, those inconsistencies, man. They just so many things that don't make sense.
Well, he should just say, you know, I just killed the hitman. We gotta get rid of this body too. But I guess it's not as funny.
Right.
I don't know. So she goes, oh, what are you doing? He goes, oh, a little home improvement. Hang in there, folks. We're almost done. So Jen says, I'm going to Sicily with the author. She gets mad at him because she knows now that Frank likes her. But she's mad at Frank for not saying anything. And she's actually kind of true, because this is the chance for Frankie to say, look, don't go. I've been in love with you all this time. Don't go with this guy. He's a bum.
Yep.
Marcello asked me to go to Sicily with him.
So I guess you're...
going.
Of course.
It's no big deal or anything. What are you afraid of? Telling me something I want to hear? Telling me something that I'm more than just an obligation? Maybe I mean something to you?
But he doesn't do it. He plays a little bit of the puppy dog in the corner, which isn't very appealing, and she doesn't like it either.
Right.
So she goes to Sicily, and they go to the opera house where her mother used to perform at, and we find out that this author isn't everything he claims to be. Do you want to explain that?
You cut out on me. I didn't hear that last part.
Oh, we find out here in Sicily, when she's on the date with this guy, that he isn't everything he claims to be.
Right. Yeah, it turns out that he's actually the son of the mafia head that she killed by marrying him to death.
And do you want to know who I am?
I know who you are, Marcello.
You have no idea who I am.
What?
Your father, he killed my father.
Marcello,
call me Johnny. Sammy's son.
Sammy who?
Sammy Carbone. Angelo murdered him standing there unarmed with only a golf club in his hands. Such a coward.
No, you're making him stay.
Enough. Father did, it lives in me like it was yesterday. That pain eating away.
Gianni or Marcello.
Marcello, what a freaking stupid name.
I like that name.
With those stupid books. I couldn't believe my luck. But then Bruno said, you needed your little fantasies.
Bruno, you killed my father and not Malatesta?
Jennifer, please understand. La vendetta è tutto.
And his motives are definitely not pure.
Yeah. So he goes to kill her. Frankie, in typical Avenging Angelo form, comes flying again up.
Just this guy just comes out of nowhere.
It's like what I love is he's already in full run mode, right? So we have to picture that he's already been running at some point before this.
Right.
Like he's been running up the hill, finding the opera house. So he goes from New York to Sicily, and boy, his timing. Imagine if his flight was delayed. Like,
yeah, my. It's like, oh. I just don't understand it. Like I said, the sequence of events in this movie are baffling.
So, the movie ends with them falling in love.
This is a theater. Angelo was right. He said I'd be back someday. You know, when I was a boy with Angelo, I'd watch you. I would. On summer nights, I'd watch you and I'd memorize your face in the moonlight. I fell in love with you then. And I guess I'm falling still.
Frankie, I love you, so don't you do anything dumb like die on me right after you made an admission like that. Because you should have made it a long time ago.
Living in Sicily, he's now a cook. They've got a kid together, so he's got a baby at 57, she's 45, they got a baby together. He's adopted the kid that was from military school. She's now fluent in Italian.
You know, Angelo used to say there's never perfect people, only perfect moments. And of course he was right, because I'm living one of them. Doing something I love, in a place that I love, with a new family that I love.
Go and get Frankie for me, will you? Thank you, Raleigh.
Needless to say, Jennifer has found her roots and is becoming more like an authentic Italian mother every day. And I'm enjoying being around it all. And why not? Isn't living better than watching?
And they're walking down together as a big family of four, and they live happily ever after.
And Stallone's wearing a, if I remember correctly, a wife beater and a chef hat at the time.
Yes, yes. Yeah, he had to show off his arms a few times in this film. He did show off his... Yeah, he's got the wife beater. I tell you, when I'm getting my food from cooks, I love it when they're just dripping from their pits into the food.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. I mean, it adds a little extra wang to it, you know what I mean?
A little bit of Italian grease oil.
That's right.
Sorry I did a lot of talking for my audience members. I apologize, Chris. I just took so many notes. I just didn't want to miss anything. And
Oh, no, that's excellent. I figured you took the notes, so I knew you were going to be able to give us the rundown. I mean, I remember the majority of it. It's just, you know, it's been a minute since I've actually sat down and watched it.
Out of 10, what do you give this film?
Oh, boy. I probably would have to give it like a 5. It's not horrible, but it's not great.
No, you know, Madeline Stowe was she's the MVP in this, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And honestly, like I said, I think that if Stallone had had more involvement behind the camera, this could have been a better movie. And I think that, like you said, if they had gone with that little comedic part there at the funeral, if they had expanded upon that throughout the movie,
right,
this could have been exactly what they wanted, what it seemed like they wanted it to be.
Yeah, I concur. Yeah, are you going to watch this film again?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, there's no Stallone movie other than the porno that I probably won't watch again. So, you know.
Yeah, we'll leave that to Matt.
Yeah, we'll let him do that one. Get your script ready, Matt. I know you got an alternative script for that. That's right. It was going to be Freddy versus Jason versus Ash versus Stud.
there's an alternate scene universe where the party at Kitty and Stud was actually a business meeting.
That's right.
That where they ordered pizza and then boy. So there you go, folks.
Party and Kitty and Stud was actually supposed to be what eventually became Behind the Green Door.
Oh man.
Terrible.
So yeah, speaking of Jimmy, he said that Stallone had did seven different porns or something, according to Jimmy.
Yeah, which absolutely is ridiculous. That's not the case at all. I mean, that's
for our listeners. Know, I'm referring to for our listeners here on the Stallone podcast, or sorry, the Rocky series, Going the Distance podcast. Chris did an amazing interview with Jimmy Gambino. Did I get that right?
Gambino.
Jimmy Gambino. He played, if you remember, he played Mike and Jimmy in a Rocky 1 and 5. And he's a little short guy that when Rocky asked him, "Are you deaf?" He goes, "No, I'm not deaf. I'm just short." He's that character. So anyways, he's got a bone to pick with Stallone. So if you want to hear some great... If you thought this episode was crazy, go listen to Stallone Fanatics, episode 20-something. I can't remember. But it's the interview with Jimmy Gambino. That's all I'm going to say. It's 2 hours of a raving lunatic. Let's be honest.
Of a raving lunatic. That's exactly it, too.
Sorry. Jimmy ain't ever coming to my show, so I don't care. This guy...
That's right. You
know, he's angry at the whole world. I could have been something. Yeah. I could have been a star. So
I was the reason John Travolta was a success.
So we have him to blame.
Yeah.
man.
Thanks for that Scientology stuff. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Jimmy. That's Avenging Angelo. So this was a one-off episode where every now and then we just talk about a Stallone movie, and we did that today with Avenging Angelo, and I think this might be the ultimate Avenging Angelo podcast episode. I don't know if any other film episode, or any other film podcast out there has covered Avenging Angelo. If they did, I don't think they quite covered it the way we did.
And I don't think they did, and nor do I think they will.
So if anyone ever Google searches podcast Avenging Angelo, they're going to get this one.
That's right. Lucky us.
Lucky them. Well, again, for me, for listeners from the Stallone Fanatics listening group, come listen to my show as well. That is the Rocky Series podcast, Going the Distance. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, whatever way you listen to podcasts, we are there. Just Google Going the Distance, the Rocky Series podcast, and you will find us. Tell my listeners, Chris, where they can find you.
We can find us on Facebook at the Stallone Fanatics Facebook group. You can find us on CastBox and also on Blueberry, BlueBrry.com, where you can just click and listen and download.
There you go. Well, Chris, as always, it's a pleasure. It's been a joy. Thanks for your laughter. It helps get through this.
That's right. Always a pleasure to do an episode with you, Ryan.
Do you mind going out with the ding ding?
Ding ding. Thank you.